Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractors Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is presented by Tom Grandy and is entitled Cash Flow and Cash Flow Budgeting. Tom has more than 25 years' experience in industry and small business. He has worked as the general manager of a service company, regional director of company development for the Dial One franchise, and is the founder and president of Grandy & Associates. Tom has written numerous articles for trade magazines while working with contractors on a one-on-one basis. His industrial engineering degree from Virginia Polytechnic Institute gives him a unique perspective as he presents his full-day seminar workshops through local, state, and national trade associations. During today's tape, Tom will share with you on the subject of cash flow, which is the number two killer of small businesses today. He will give you an outline of how to set up a month-by-month, department-by-department cash flow budget to project profitability and cash flow needs for the coming months. He will also share a number of tips on how to improve your cash flow each month.
According to the Small Business Administration, of all the companies that start up this year, 95% will fail the very first year. That's right, 95% of all the companies that start up this year will fail the very first year. And even more startling than that is the fact that only 1 out of 1,000 companies that start up this year will ever see their 20th birthday. The 1 in 1,000 is a statistic that really got my attention, because that's exactly what I'm seeing all over this country. Good, solid, quality companies going out of business. Companies that have been in business 5, 10, 15, or more years going out of business. The sad part is that most of them were as busy the day they closed their doors as they had been for the past several years. Now, what do you think the government listed as the main reason for failure? What they said was poor paperwork. That's right, poor paperwork. They went on to explain that most company owners do not understand what is going on inside of their companies. Therefore, when things begin to change, they don't realize it until it's too late. You're not the same company you were 6 months ago, and you're not the same company you will be 6 months from today. Things are changing, and they're changing rapidly. And unless we have a simple system set up to tell us what's going on inside of our company, we'll be in trouble before we know it. Now, there are two major problems in the service industry today. The first is improper pricing, and the second is cash flow. Pricing is the cornerstone. If we don't know what we have to charge to cover our real cost of doing business while still generating a profit, we'll soon be in trouble. Once pricing is properly established, however, the next major hurdle is cash flow. Cash flow is the lifeblood of any company, and without proper cash flow, even strong companies will soon die. So what is cash flow? Well, in its simplest form, cash flow deals with the real dollars, not the paper ones, that flow in and out of a company on a daily basis. There are significant differences in cash flow and accounting, many of which we're going to talk about later on today. From a purely practical standpoint, we've all experienced differences in cash flow and accounting. Let's assume it's the end of the year and we're meeting with our accountant. The accountant typically comes in with a smile on his face or her face and says, "Congratulations, Mr. Doe. You had a wonderful year. You made X numbers of thousands of dollars." You then, in turn, look at your checkbook and say, "Where is it?" There are very real and very significant differences in cash flow and accounting. Cash flow deals with real dollars, not the paper ones, that flow in and out of your company on a daily basis. Cash flow problems first begin when we have to pay our labor, materials, and overhead costs basically right away, or at least within the next 30 days. Cash flow problems begin to develop because we have not been paid for the work we've completed. Now, if we got paid immediately after every job, we would know two things right away. First, we would know if we were profitable or not. We would pay all our bills, and if there was anything left, we'd know we were making money. Secondly, most, but not all, of our cash flow problems would disappear. Now, when I talk about putting together a cash flow system, I'm talking about first developing a cash flow budget. A cash flow budget is the heart of any cash flow system. Therefore, we're going to spend a lot of significant time talking about the mechanics of how to set up a cash flow budget. The second part of our system deals with monitoring that cash flow budget after it's been developed. The third part of the system deals with tracking payables and receivables. And the fourth part of our cash flow system deals with developing a cash flow summary statement, which is literally a snapshot of our company at the end of the month that says, if everyone paid us and we paid everybody else, how would we stand? Now, when it comes right down to developing a cash flow system, there are some things it will do for you and some things that it won't do. First, it will not create cash that's not there. Oh, I wish it would, because if it did, I would can it and I'd sell it and I'd make lots of money. But it won't create cash that's not there. Secondly, developing a cash flow system won't keep you from having cash flow problems. Unfortunately, the larger you get, the more cash flow problems you're going to have. And thirdly, developing a cash flow system will not solve your cash flow problems for you. That is up to the owner or the manager to do. There are, however, some things putting together a cash flow system will do for you. First, it will help the company predict what cash flow needs will be, and more importantly, when they are expected to occur. Next, it will help identify problem areas within the company. And lastly, and most importantly, developing a cash flow system will provide management with enough lead time to plan how to meet the projected cash flow needs. As I said earlier, the heart of any cash flow system is developing a cash flow budget for the coming year. Developing a cash flow budget will force you to look at your company in detail, perhaps for the very first time. During the process of developing the budget, you will find out exactly what it cost you to run your company. Developing a cash flow budget will also provide accountability for everyone involved in developing it. If you're a larger company, get the office people and your middle management people involved in the budgeting process. This will not only help them feel like part of the team, but it will cause them to work more effectively since they are now accountable to the numbers that they've developed. A budget will also provide good information upon which to base economic decisions. Things like, should we add another person in the office? Or should we buy another truck? Budgeting the what-ifs will quickly show you if that decision will be profitable to the company or not. A budget will not, however, solve your problems for you, and will be of very little value to you if you don't use it on a monthly basis. Now, hopefully by this time you're saying to yourself, okay, Tom, if I have to do a budget, I'll do a budget. But do I have to do it on a month-by-month basis? That's a lot of trouble. That means I need to decide now who's going to get a raise next year and when. It means I'll have to decide what conferences I'm going to and how much I'm going to spend when I get there. It means I have to decide what kind of marketing I'm going to do next year and how much it will cost and when I'm going to do it. It also means I have to call the insurance company to find out what next year's rates will be, as well as deciding what I'm going to do about Yellow Pages. And by the way, do you know how Yellow Page people are paid? It's absolutely critical to you. Yellow Page people are paid, for the most part, on a 100% commission basis based on your increase from the previous year. That's right, based on your increase from the previous year. If you don't increase the amount of your ad, the salesperson makes $0. Is it any wonder that the first words out of the mouth of the salesperson are in the area of recommending a bigger ad, a brighter ad, 7 colors, 15 pages if you'll buy it? Remember, large yellow page ads are useful if you do emergency repair. If you do mostly installation work, that kind of work normally comes from repeat customers and referrals. In that case, you don't want or need a large yellow page ad. Now back to our budget. The point is this. If you don't put next year's budget together on a month-by-month basis, you will miss some very important information. Let's look at a sample company to see what kind of information a month-by-month cash flow budget will give us. The top line of our monthly budget is called gross sales. In January, we show cash flow income of $12,000, with $8,000 in February, $7,000 in March, $22,000 in April, and so on. Now, the first thing we notice is this, that we're seasonal. Well, every service and trades company is seasonal. That's no surprise to any of us. The second line says less cost of sales. And again, to keep it simple, this will include all of our labor, materials, and overhead costs. You will notice the cost of sales is seasonal as well, from a low of about $13,000 to a monthly high of about $25,000. Some of this seasonality is due to sales, and some of it is due to certain overhead costs popping in at certain times. Things like the down payment on workman's comp, or a marketing plan hitting in April or June or September. Sales and the cost of sales are both very seasonal, but they seldom peak at the same time, therefore causing short-term cash flow problems. Now, if we simply looked at our little company for the year, we would see that we have a $47,000 profit, which isn't bad for our little company. As a matter of fact, it's quite good. But notice what the month-by-month projections are showing us. We're projecting a $7,000 loss in December, a $6,000 loss in January, an $8,000 loss in February, and another $7,000 loss in March. That means from December through the end of March, we're going to go $28,000 in the hole before things turn around. This is a critical piece of information for any small company. How much are we going to go negative and when? Now let's say we're now in March and we don't have a budget and we find ourselves $21,000 in the hole. Since I don't know how long it's going to last, I think I'll go down to my handy-dandy local banker and get, let's say $21,000 to cover my current loss, and how about another $29,000 since I don't really know how long this is going to last. So I'm going to ask my banker for $50,000. Now what do you think he's going to say to me? That is, after he gets off the floor and stops laughing. You're right. He's going to say, no. Now stop for a minute. Why is a bank in business? Right, for the same reason you and I are, to make money. And how do they make money? Right again, by loaning money to people. Well, if they make money by loaning money, why won't they loan me money? Right again, the banker doesn't think he's ever going to get his money back, much less the interest on top of it. You see, he doesn't think that I have any idea what's going on inside of my company. And for the most part, he's usually right. The time to see your banker to set up a line of credit is when everything is going great. You have money in the bank. You can show the banker you have been profitable for the last 2 to 4 years. And yes, you can show him your month-by-month cash flow budget for the coming year. The budget shows the banker that you will once again be profitable by the end of the year, but you'll also have some short-term cash flow problems. That doesn't scare the banker. He understands cash flow problems. He just wants to know that you know what's going on inside of your company. Once he thinks that you understand what's going on inside your company, he'll be more than happy to loan you money. Now, some time back, I received a copy of a newsletter from a major manufacturer. One of the articles was on cash flow and cash flow budgeting. And I want to read just a couple of paragraphs to you because it clarifies several things that we've talked about thus far. The article goes like this. It says, a budget is a plan of action that takes into consideration the projection of profit and loss only. It does not consider the amounts or, more importantly, the timing of the money needed to implement the plan. We need to go one step farther, and that is to encourage the forecasting of cash requirements. Now, that's what we were talking about when we were looking at a month-by-month budget. How much cash are we going to need, and when are we going to need it? Now, listen to this next paragraph. Surprisingly, a dealer can become insolvent, that means go out of business, in the middle of his highest volume or his most profitable year. Do you realize most companies go out of business in their highest volume, most profitable year? That's why it's necessary to have both profit and loss budgets and cash forecasts, since cash is not the same thing as profits. Let me say that again. Cash is not the same thing as profits. If I go out and do a service call and I charge a customer $100 and it costs me $50, I made a, quote, 50% profit, but if I don't collect the money, I have zero cash flow. So cash is not the same thing as profits. Then it goes on to say, during periods of high profits, cash can very well be in short supply, and borrowing from a bank or other financial institution may be required to support current operations. Working capital has to be monitored constantly during periods of rapid growth. Since this is the measure of the dealership's ability to pay bills in the short term, such as payroll, taxes, equipment, material suppliers, etc., while at the same time, during this period of rapid growth, while at the same time the dealership is granting expanded credit to its own customers. Now, how do you think a dealership, a company like yourself, could inadvertently, that means not on purpose, expand credit to its own customers during a period of rapid growth? What do you think? Well, think back 2, 3, 5, 10, 15 years ago whenever you started your company. You just did your first couple of jobs. You're working by yourself. You'd work for 2 or 3 days maybe on that job, and when you finished it, where were you 5 minutes after that job was complete? That's right. You were standing on that front porch with your hand out saying, Mr. or Ms. Homeowner, I finished the job, and I'd like my check, please, and you didn't leave till you got it. Now we find ourselves 2, 3, 5, 10 years later with a half a dozen crews out there, and I'm not real sure I want the crews to collect the money, so I think I'll invoice the customer. Besides, things are growing real fast and things are moving pretty quick, and I'm not sure I want them to do that, so I'm going to invoice the customer. And because things are moving real quick and all that sort of thing, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do it every day, so I'm going to do it once a month. At the end of each month, I'm going to invoice the customer. Well, what's that mean? That means a customer I finished the first week of the month is now at least 3, maybe 4 weeks before I even send them an invoice. And then it's going to be another 2 days to a week before they get it. And because I'm not standing right there in front of them, they're probably not going to pay it right away. So I've gone from basically instant cash flow to anywhere from 30, 60, perhaps 90 days before I get my money. That's how I can inadvertently, that is not on purpose, expand credit to my own customers during a period of rapid growth. The last statement on here says this. It says the only time, the only good time, to present your plan, that is your budget and your cash forecast, to your banker is prior to the time that it's needed. The basic thing I want you to remember out of that article is, first of all, if you're in a period of rapid growth, that's a big red flag. It says, hey, it's time to watch cash flow carefully. And I want you to remember that most companies in our industry go out of business in their highest volume, most profitable year. So keep those things in mind as we go along. Now, as I said earlier, there are several items that are unique to cash flow budgeting as opposed to accounting. The first is equipment replacement costs versus depreciation. Equipment replacement will always be higher than depreciation since it takes into account the future cost of replacing equipment rather than the original purchase price the way depreciation does. Equipment replacement costs are calculated by first projecting how many years current equipment will last and then estimating what it will cost to replace it that many years in the future. For example, let's assume one of our current vehicles was purchased in 1992 for $18,000. Based on its current use, our best estimate is that this vehicle will last us another 3 years before we have to replace it. And that it'll cost us, again, our best estimate, about $21,000 to replace it 3 years from today. Now, the annual equipment replacement cost would be $21,000 divided by our three remaining years, or about $7,000 a year. Now, if we had used depreciation, we would be looking at depreciating the original $18,000 and would therefore have found ourselves thousands of dollars short when it was time to replace the equipment. Another significant difference in cash flow and accounting is the area of loan payments. Again, let's assume we have a $500 a month loan payment, of which $100 is interest and the rest is principal. From an accounting standpoint, only the $100 interest is considered as a valid business expense. But from a cash flow standpoint, we wrote out a check for $500, all of which flowed out of our checkbook. If a company has several outstanding loans, the difference in counting the principal can be the difference in being profitable and losing money. I recently worked with a company that had interest from their loans of about $800 a month, but the actual loan payments, now listen to this, the actual loan payments amounted to over $3,200 a month, which made a significant difference in their real and their perceived profitability. Another significant difference in cash flow and accounting is the way matching taxes are handled. Matching taxes are the taxes which a company pays over and above what the employee pays. These taxes include the matching Social Security and Medicare taxes of 7.65%. It includes FUTA tax, which is your federal unemployment, and of course, your state unemployment tax. Social Security and FUTA tax are the same for all companies, but the state unemployment tax varies from state to state and from company to company. Some states, like Kentucky, have a minimum tax of 2%, while others, like Illinois, go as low as 0.1%, and the maximum varies from state to state as well. If you have had very few layoffs, your rate will be low, and if you have laid off a lot of people, your rate will be high, perhaps as much as 4%, 5%, 6%, maybe 10%. When you add all these matching taxes together, the total normally comes to about 10 to 12% for most companies. Let's assume ours came to 10%. What that means is that every $100 our company pays out in payroll, it costs the company an additional $10 or 10% on top of it. When we look at a company's matching taxes from a cash flow standpoint, we will assume once the payroll period is over, the matching taxes are gone as well. Now, from an accounting standpoint, they may not be deposited yet, but from a cash flow perspective, we're going to assume they're gone. I'd like to make a suggestion at this point. I'd like to suggest that you consider creating a separate checking account just for payroll. Again, consider setting up a separate checking account just for payroll. And then at the end of each payroll period, transfer your gross payroll plus the matching taxes to the new account and then write your payroll taxes out of the new account. Now, the money that remains in the new account will be all the employees' withholding taxes plus the company's matching taxes. If you transfer the payroll and the matching taxes to your new account, you will be less likely to do what we all do, and that is to spend the money, hoping to replace it by the time your tax deposit is due. You can still get to the money in the new account, but you're much less likely to spend it if it's in another account or at least one other than your general checkbook. Now that we've looked at a few differences in cash flow and accounting, let's spend some time talking about how to physically create a month-by-month, department-by-department cash flow budget for your company for the coming year. Let's begin with estimating what our gross sales will be. Now, in order to estimate gross sales for the coming year, four things need to be considered. The first is past history. It's always good to physically write down what your cash flow income was on a monthly basis for the past 3 years. The purpose is twofold. First, to see what your overall growth has been, and secondly, to isolate seasonal trends. Now, we all have a, quote, feel for what these things are, what these times are, but they become very clear when we put them on paper. The second thing to consider when estimating sales is the general market conditions and the economy. Although I never like to blame lack of sales on the economy, there are sometimes situations that will affect us. Several years ago, during the Gulf War, I had a company in one of my seminars that was located near an Army base. And over a period of about 3 months, they lost 17,000 people out of their local economy. Now, that kind of a change will make a difference. The third thing to consider when estimating sales are any planned changes in your marketing strategy for the next year. If you're planning on investing in new marketing programs, you should rightfully expect an increase in sales. And the final consideration is estimating sales is whether any new products or services are going to be offered in the coming year. Again, new products and services should produce additional sales. When past history, general market conditions, planned changes in marketing and new products and services are considered, projecting sales gets a little bit easier. Now, the first time you budget, a lot of what you will do will be what I call guesstimates. But as you continue the process year after year, you will become better and better at estimating. The next thing to consider in our budget, in our budgeting process, deals with labor. Now, there's two types of labor, field labor and overhead labor. Overhead labor refers to those people who work in the office, like secretaries, managers, and or perhaps even the owner. When estimating overhead labor, the big considerations are, will these people get an increase in wages over the next 12 months? And if so, how much will they be, and when will it occur? Estimating field labor, believe it or not, is relatively simple. To estimate field labor for the coming year, we need to divide last year's direct labor costs by last year's total gross sales. When we do this, we will come out with a percentage, normally somewhere between 15 and 25%, depending on the type of trade you're in and the type of work that you do. Once you determine what this percentage is, you will want to multiply it by your estimated sales for each of the coming months. By using labor as a percent of sales, you will be able to accurately estimate what your labor cost will be. The labor costs as a percent of sales will not change significantly if sales go up or if sales go down. The percentage will tend to be relatively the same. Estimating material sales is done exactly like field labor. Again, simply divide last year's cost of materials by last year's gross sales and come up with a percentage. And when you arrive at that percentage, multiply it by your estimated gross sales, and there you have it, your material estimates for the coming year. Like labor, the percentage will not change significantly as sales go up or go down. Now, as a general rule of thumb, the combination of labor and materials normally averages somewhere between 60 and 62% of sales. The percentage of labor versus materials may take a wide swing depending on the trade you're in and whether you're heavy service or heavy installation. But the total of the two should be somewhere in the 60% range, with overhead being somewhere around 28 to 32% of sales, leaving 8 to 10% as pre-taxed net profit. Most of the time, a company's profitability is most affected not by labor or by materials, but by how much overhead they have. If you're in your office listening to this tape, you may want to stop the tape for a moment and go find out what last year's overhead cost was as a percent of sales. If you're much over 32%, it's time to find out why. The most difficult thing to estimate is overhead costs. Estimating involves both the amount to be spent and when it will be spent. Once costs and timing are determined, we'll need to spread those costs to each of our different departments to eventually decide what's making money and what isn't. If you're not breaking your company into departments, the process is rather simple. You will need to look at last year's costs and ask yourself, what is going to increase, what will stay the same, and what may decrease. You will also need to decide if there are additional overhead costs that you didn't have last year and will occur over the coming year. When looking at overhead costs, we need to estimate not only what they will be, but just as importantly, when will they occur, since this will determine our cash flow needs for the coming year. When overhead costs are being split between departments, which is the only true way to find out what's making money and what isn't, the process gets a little more detailed. The first thing to do is to look at each and every overhead cost and ask ourselves, is it department specific? Department specific simply means that specific overhead costs are present because of that specific department. For example, if you were to send out a direct mail piece to service customers, then that would be a department-specific cost, meaning the cost exists only because that department is there. Therefore, 100% of that specific overhead cost would go to that specific department. Other overhead costs, like an estimator, may be split between two or more departments. You may know that your estimator spends, say 30% of his or her time working on residential bids, and the remainder 70% on commercial bids. The overhead will then be split between those two areas with the percentages we just mentioned. Once all overhead costs are reviewed, there will still be a significant number that are not department specific, but apply to all the departments, and this is called general overhead. This would be things like the owner's salary, rent, utilities, attorney's fees, other things like that that apply to all the different departments. Now, normally, the best way to spread these costs is by estimated gross sales. Let's assume for a moment that your company is being split into three areas. And to keep it really simple, let's say next year we've estimated sales of $10,000 in the installation department with total company sales of $40,000. If we divide the $10,000 by the $40,000, that means that the installation department is projected to produce 25% of our total sales. Therefore, we'll take 25% of the general overhead and charge it to the installation department. Now, we now have all the information we need to complete our budget. We can see if we're going to make money on a monthly basis, and if we're going to have cash flow problems. Once we look at our completed month-by-month, department-by-department budget, we need to ask ourselves three things. First, are we as a total company projected to make a reasonable profit over the next 12 months? Secondly, what about each individual department? Is each one showing a projected profit for the coming 12 months? And the final question is this. Even if we are going to make money as a whole, and we're going to make money in each department, can we live with the projected cash flow needs? Are we going to have months where we're going to lose money? And if so, how much and when will they occur? If the answer is no to any of these questions, it's time for management to stop and take a serious look at what's coming up. Are changes needed? And if so, when and where? Remember one thing. I want to repeat this so you know what's going on. Remember this one thing. Do not automatically eliminate a department just because it's projected to lose money. Each and every department is carrying a significant amount of fixed overhead cost. If we were to eliminate a department, the fixed overhead that department is carrying will not go away, and it will need to be picked up by other departments, therefore changing their profitability. It's okay to lose money in a department if one of two things is true. You can lose money if that department is absorbing enough overhead to make the other departments profitable. It's also okay to lose money if that department is creating profitable sales in other departments. Sometimes a department can be what's known as a lost leader. Now, Walmart was an excellent example of a lost leader several years ago. When videotapes first came out, they were being rented for $3 to $5 a night. Walmart picked 10 of their stores and decided to create a lost leader. They created a video rental center right in the center of each of those 10 stores. And they rented videos for 49 cents a night. And guess what happened? You're right. Hundreds, if not thousands, of customers came to the middle of that Walmart store to rent videos for 49 cents a night. Now, Walmart lost money on every rental, but what else do you think happened? Right again. Every customer also left the store with what? Paper, clothing, auto supplies, who knows, whatever. In other words, they bought other profitable items while they were there. The video lost money, but it created profitable sales for other areas of their store. This is also true in the trades industry. Traditionally, new construction is very high volume and a low profit area of your company. In addition to the low profit, it's also usually slow pay, anywhere from 30 to 120 days. The low profit or no profit situation is okay if the new construction is carrying a significant amount of fixed overhead and or is generating service contracts or maintenance work, both of which are very profitable. Again, do not automatically eliminate a department just because it appears to be losing money. Now, once our cash flow budget is complete, it becomes very important to track the results each month. A simple format of budget versus actual will tell us all we need to know. We do, however, need to track both the month and the year-to-date results because problems will often correct themselves in the short term. You may have budgeted $500 a month for insurance in May, but in May you didn't spend any. In reality, the invoice may not have been sent or may not have been received. So in June, you paid the $500 for that month as well as the $500 for May. Your year-to-date column will give you a feel for what's really happening over a period of time. Accounts payable also significantly affects cash flow. When we look at tracking our budget versus actual figures each month, it assumes something. It assumes that you have paid all of your bills. A couple of years ago, I worked with a company in Western Kentucky, and we set up a simple budget, and then I called him each month to see how he was doing. and he would give me his budget figures as well as the actual figures. And each month, the budget figure closely matched his actual figure. After 3 months, I visited his location. And you know what I found out? I found out that he'd not paid his notes at the bank for the last 3 months in a row. The budget versus actual assumes that you have paid all of your bills. Therefore, it's very important to track your total payables each month. Many computer systems will track this automatically for you, or you can simply use a piece of paper to keep track of what you owe to other people. It's best to plot this information on a monthly graph also, since a graph will show you trends that you may not see otherwise. Now, accounts receivable needs to be tracked in a similar way, especially since this particular area tends to be the basis for most of our cash flow problems. Do you know what the very best thing you can do for your customer is? Keep them current. Keep them paid up. Let me explain what I mean with a very simple example. Let's assume for a moment I'm a handyman around the house. I'm not, but let's assume I am. And let's assume every Saturday morning I go down to my local hardware store and I buy $15, $20 worth of materials and I go back to the house and I do my little job. And I do that every Saturday. And then all of a sudden one Saturday I'm really energetic. And I go down to my local hardware store and I buy $200 worth of materials to work on the project at the house. And maybe I forgot my checkbook, maybe I didn't have the money, it really doesn't matter what it is. The point is, I didn't pay for it, I charged it. And I went home and I did my project. And a couple of weeks later, I got the invoice in the mail. And for whatever reason, I haven't paid it yet. Maybe I don't have the money, maybe I just hadn't sat down to take the time to pay the bill, but the bottom line is, I haven't paid it yet. And now Saturday rolls around again. And I need to go down and buy a hammer to do the job that I need to do that morning. Now, do you think I'm going to go back to that same hardware store that I owe $200 to? Nope. Probably not. Why not? Well, I'm scared to death that when I walk through the front door, that clerk behind the counter, he's going to jump out of his seat and he said, Mr. Grandy, by the way, you owe us $200. Now, in reality, he probably doesn't have the faintest idea who owes what. But I don't want to take that chance. I don't want to possibly be embarrassed by them asking me that question. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go to a different hardware store and buy my hammer there. And yes, know what? I might like that other store as well, if not better, than the one I've been working with. And your customers the same way. If they're not paid up, and now they got some service work that needs to be done, guess what? They're probably not going to call you. So the best thing you can do for yourself and the best thing you can do for your customer is to keep them paid up. Keep them current. Based on figures from the U.S. Department of Commerce, you know what your dollar's worth after 30 days? It's worth 97 cents based on the time value of money. And after 60 days, it's worth 90 cents, which means after 60 days, you've lost all your profit and probably some of your cost. Cash flow is the lifeblood of your company. Do whatever you need to do to get the cash in. Next, I'd like to go over several suggestions to help you from a cash flow standpoint. We're going to look at a checklist of things to look at before the job begins, while the job is being done, and when the job is complete. First, let's look at some things before the job begins. Number one, are all the payment arrangements settled up front while you're selling the job? That is, have you decided how things are going to be paid and written it right into your contract? You need to do that. Secondly, is it clear when payments will be made by cash, credit card, personal check, bill to an open account? How are they going to pay it? That needs to be settled up front, again, as part of your contract. Number three, does the property owner or responsible party fill out a company credit application before credit is extended? Now think about the people you've had problems with over the last weeks or months or years. It's normally the people in town that you'd think can or should be able to pay you easily. It's your doctors or your lawyers or the people who appear to have lots of money. If you will make it standard policy in your company, before you extend credit to anybody, that you have them fill out a company credit application, you'll avoid a lot of problems over the years. Just make a standard procedure for everybody that you're going to extend credit to. Number four, has a credit limit been set up on each open account? It should be. Number five, is the status of an account checked before additional credit is extended? Number six, have we established a target amount of credit your company can afford to extend? Normally, 20% of sales is about as much as you can handle without having some serious cash flow problems. Number seven, does the contract include a schedule of dates or events when progress payments will be made? Number eight, do we collect in advance, or we should collect in advance at least the wholesale cost of any special order item? Why do we want to do that? So that if the customer for some reason cancels that order, we at least have our wholesale costs covered and we don't lose any money on it. And number nine, are advance payments negotiated to cover the cost of labor, thus relieving cash flow pressures? What we're talking about here is a down payment. I'm always amazed when I ask in the middle of one of our seminars, how many people in here get a down payment for their jobs? Typically, I'll have less than a third of the room raise their hand. And yet that third of the room that raises their hand, you know what? Most of them are getting anywhere from 10 and many as much as 50% of the job down simply because they asked. I always recommend you get a down payment on the job for two reasons. One, it helps you from a cash flow standpoint. Number two, are all change orders written up and signed by the customer within 48 hours? Or what I really recommend is within 24 hours. Now, why do we want it written up and why do we want it signed? Well, again, let me give you an example. Let's assume I'm midway in a job and I find something that's a problem that I didn't know about and the customer didn't know about it. So I go back and I talk to the customer and say, hey, I found this particular problem. And he said, oh, I understand. And he said, how much is it going to cost to repair it? And I make some figures and I said, well, it's going to cost about $200 to repair it. Do you want us to do it? And they think for a moment. He says, yeah, go ahead and do it. So we finish the job. I go back with my original invoice, and I have an additional $200 on there. And guess what happens? Amnesia sets in. What's this $200? Well, gee, don't you remember a couple weeks ago we were in the middle of a job and we found this particular situation? Don't you remember talking about that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do remember talking about that. But you were going to charge me for it? Yep. We don't have a leg to stand on if we don't have it written up and signed, normally within 24 hours. And number three, again with change orders, we want the customer to understand that change orders are invoiced separately and will be billed immediately when that particular job is complete. A change order is a separate job. It has nothing to do with your original invoice, your original contract. Therefore, it will be invoiced separately and billed immediately when that portion is complete. Number four, when payment is in staged disbursements, does the customer understand that delaying payment will halt production? Now, I see people just go aghast when I say that. Man, you mean I've got 10 houses out there I'm building for this particular builder, I've just finished two of them, and he hasn't paid me for the first two, and you want me to stop production? That's right. I'd much rather lose money on two houses than I would on all 10 of them. Now, what about when a job is done? Let's talk about a few things in that area. When a job is done, number one, are all our service tickets or installation information, is it all completely and legibly and accurately written down? Unless we can get that kind of information back to the office, it is impossible to job cost our jobs to find out how we're doing. Number two, how about a promissory note on the back of your service ticket? Now, typically, when we go out to do a service job of some kind, we'll ask the customer on the telephone, how are you going to pay for this job? Cash? Credit card? Write a check? How are you going to pay? Normally, they'll tell us. So we've got Ms. Jones out there and said, Ms. Jones, how are you going to pay for this? She said, well, when you get here, I'll write a check for it. That'd be fine. So we go on out to Ms. Jones' house. We do the job. We finished it. We go back to Ms. Jones, hand her a bill for $45. And guess what? She can't find her checkbook. My husband must have it, or it's probably in some other purse. Could you just bill me for that? Sure, Miss Jones, that's no problem. But if you don't mind, on the back of our service ticket here, we have a little promissory note written up. Would you mind signing that before I leave? You know what happens? Suddenly we remember where the checkbook is. Or we find $45 in cash somewhere in the house where we can pay the bill. Now, from a legal standpoint, probably our promissory note doesn't hold water. But from a perceived standpoint, sometimes it'll get a bill paid that wouldn't be paid otherwise. Number three, are charge customers sent a bill immediately after a job is completed? They should be. And number four, how about bookkeeping charges? If you're going to charge the customer a late fee or bookkeeping charges of some kind, it has to be stated on their original invoice. You cannot send them two notices and then say, hey, we're going to charge you a $5 or $10 or $15 late fee, unless you've stated it on the original invoice. From a legal standpoint, it has to be there. And number five, are all monies held in retention, rigorously followed up on? And of course, we want to do that. Why? Because all our profit and sometimes some of our cost is involved in that as well. The next thing we want to talk about is what's known as a cash flow summary statement. This is literally a photo of your company at the end of each month. You take your current checkbook and your savings account balances and add them to your receivables. And from this, you subtract your payables and then see what's left. Basically, what we're saying is this. If your company were to shut down and you paid everybody else and everybody paid you, how would you stand? And then when we want to track the status on a monthly basis. As we said at the beginning of this tape, cash flow is the lifeblood of your company. Aside from improper pricing, cash flow, or lack of it, kills more companies than any other single factor. Now, there are three critical times in a company's history from a cash flow standpoint. The first is when the owner moves from the field into the office. In general, your hourly rate needs to be increased $4 to $7 an hour to handle this transition. Few companies make this kind of a rate change, which lowers profits and puts the company in a very tight cash flow position. The second critical time is when gross sales get to about, somewhere between $700,000 and $1 million a year. This is the time when additional overhead costs must be added to continue growth. Middle management is added, more vehicles are purchased, and several overhead costs are increased. But sales are not quite there in terms of volume to support the additional growth. That creates a very critical time from a cash flow standpoint. And the final red flag is any period of rapid, significant growth. Now, that can be early in your career, that can be late. Anytime you have significant growth. Increased growth means more overhead, more inventory, more receivables, all of which adds up to real cash flow problems. If you're experiencing any of these three things I just described, it's absolutely critical that you develop a month-by-month, department-by-department cash flow budget for the coming months. Again, cash flow is the lifeblood of your company. Set up a budget and track the results monthly to ensure the continued profitability in your business.
We hope this edition of the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month has given you many new ideas to help you run your company more effectively. Along with this month's tape, you also receive several other things. There is a short summary of the tape you just heard, a brief outline of the program for quick review, and you will also find a customer response card enclosed. There is a place on the card for your comments on this tape, as well as space for suggestions you would like to make for topics on future tapes. The response card is postage paid, so please write down a few comments and drop it in the mail. We would love to hear from you. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.